Reporting program, Santa Rosa Subregional Reclamation. And if I may, I'll read the hearing procedure. This is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider amending NPDES permit number CA0022764 in the matter of monitoring reporting program, Santa Rosa Subregional Water Reclamation System, Sonoma County. This item has been properly noticed. She'd explain the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? This time we'll start with staff presentation.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Casey Grady and I'm staff engineer. To the board, I'm here to present item number 4 on the agenda, modification of the NPDES permit and monitoring and reporting program.
Carol, read it out. We've got it up here, Carol.
It says, the following changes to the draft permit circulated to the board. On page 1, under finding number 5 of the tentative permit, add the following termination date. The regional board has reviewed the terms of the current waiver and determined the terms are adequate for the purpose of the temporary extension of the expiration date. The expiration date is extended to no later than December 10, 2009.
Okay. We're okay if you're okay.
We're fine with it.
Okay. We have a motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, comments very briefly. One, to those in the audience that things are left out of the waiver, the approach that's been started out in the triennial review and then followed up in our sediment plan is to handle each and every sediment by category of activity. So just because something is not in this timber waiver does not mean that it's not on the sediment plan. I wanted to thank staff for upping the priority steadily over the years of this issue and responding to the regional board comments on that. It is 55% of the timber harvested in our region or lands within our region, and so it's critically important. And I also wanted to thank the state board for allowing a regional approach. I know that was actively discussed. And I believe because of level impairments and other things under 303D in our region, it was warranted to allow a regional approach. And, again, I think in the past waiver, we reserved permit and water quality in-stream authority to the state of California and the regional board, and I believe that's important provisions in going forward.
Ms. Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if Mr. Feiler or Mr. Alpert would like to talk about, just in a couple of sentences, what the work that's going on with the U.S. Forest Service for non-timber activities.
Good morning. My name is Mark Alpert. I'm a recently returned senior engineering geologist for the Southern Timber Unit. Stormer Feiler's handling the revision to the timber permit, or what we call the non-federal timber permit. So really, first, we heard a lot of comments this morning. Right in front of you is really just the extension in time so we can get the revision.
Yes.
Stormer is working on that. We are planning. You know, we've met periodically with the Forest Service. If we can meet with other groups that Felice Pace is talking about, I think that would be good. But it is, you know, there's no revision out on the street on this federal one for review. The non-federal one, which we heard comments on, is out. It's been out, I'd say, less than 2 weeks. And it's in the review process, so we are looking forward to getting these comments so we can respond to them.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. Thank you, staff. And at this point, the board's going to take a 5-minute recess. Thank you. Board will take up Item 4, Monitoring and Reporting Program, Santa Rosa Subregional Reclamation. And if I may, I'll read the hearing procedure. This is the time and place for hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider amending NPDES permit number CA0022764 in the matter of Monitoring and Reporting Program, Santa Rosa Subregional Water Reclamation Systems, Sonoma County. This item has been properly noticed. She explained the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand? Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter? This time we'll start with staff presentation.
Good morning, Chair and members of the board. My name is Casey Grady, and I'm staff engineer. To the board, I'm here to present item number 4 on the agenda, modification of the NPDES permit and monitoring and reporting program for the City of Santa Rosa Laguna Subregional Water Reclamation Facility. I would first like to introduce the late revisions into the record. They include minor changes to the monitoring and reporting program. The minor changes include an amended monitoring location descriptions to ensure accuracy with the narrative descriptions in Section 8B of the reporting program, inclusion of monitoring location R19 into the narrative exception of Table 6, and minor language changes to Section 8B2 for clarity. There were a few changes to Section 10B that remove the retired upstream Laguna monitoring report, monitoring point R008, and that rename the upstream Santa Rosa Creek monitoring report to reflect its new location as R105. Additions in the handout are denoted with underlined text, deletions, or strikeout. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them. The draft permit was circulated for public comment, and no comments were received. The item before you today contains an updated surface water monitoring program with a few other minor changes. The proposed monitoring program contains new monitoring locations, sampling methods, and compliance determination. First, I'd like to give some history of the surface water monitoring program. In September 2006, the board reissued WDR.
Jason, if you could hold on 1 second and just get closer to that mic.
Okay.
Or we'll crank it up a bit.
That's fine. I can speak louder. In September 2006, the board reissued WDR's R1-2006-45, which changed the downstream monitoring locations to the end of pipe because the existing locations were too far downstream to determine compliance with the surface water limitations. During the hearing, the city objected that it would be infeasible to collect samples at the end of pipe, and as well as the requirement could put the city in noncompliance with the receiving water limits. In response to the objections by the city, the board issued a compliant... let me rephrase that. In response to the objections by the city, rather than issue a compliance schedule, the board issued an interim monitoring program and allowed the city to propose alternative locations within 180 days. In October 2006, the city petitioned the WDRs to the State Board for review, contending, among other things, that it was entitled to a compliance schedule. In June 2007, the State Board dismissed the petition and upheld the adopted WDRs. The city submitted a conceptual proposal for the surface water monitoring program within the 180 days. And the city submitted a draft version in February 2008 and a final version of the proposed program in January 2009. I will briefly describe the details of the new surface water monitoring program, and after my presentation, the city is prepared to further describe the program and the model. First, when I refer to this program, I refer specifically to monitoring of pH, dissolved oxygen, temperature, and turbidity to determine impacts of ponded effluent on surface waters. The proposed program applies only to the city's main discharge location, discharge point 012B, at Delta Pond. All other discharge locations will require compliance with receiving water limitations at the discharge location or the end of pipe. The old program involved automated sampling with effluent and in-stream sensors to collect continuous data for 2 weeks per month. The downstream location was too far downstream to determine compliance. The program before you today, however, involves the use of a water quality model that will use continuous effluent data from the upstream receiving waters, continuous data collected from the effluent and upstream receiving waters, to calculate the pH, DO, temperature, and turbidity at the edge of the zone of initial dilution. Using this model and approach has many benefits. First, the compliance points are much closer than previously and are therefore much more representative of the actual impacts to receiving waters. Second, the city has the opportunity to adaptively manage its discharge by running the model prior to discharging in order to project what impacts will likely occur and then adjusting the discharge volumes to minimize impacts and noncompliance. Third, compliance will be determined daily instead of 2 weeks per month, as it is currently, from the continuously collected data. We believe this is an innovative approach that could potentially be used by other dischargers in the region. Here is a map of the Sonoma Valley with the Russian River at the top, Santa Rosa Creek coming in from the right, Laguna de Santa Rosa highlighted coming in from the bottom right, both converging in the middle and flowing to the Russian River to the north. The wastewater treatment facility is circled in red. City of Santa Rosa is in the right. I regret that I do not have a laser pointer. There you go. On the next slide, I will zoom in to show the area to the southeast of the confluence of Santa Rosa Creek and Laguna de Santa Rosa. Thank you, David. I'll go back one slide. We're going to look right here at the confluence. You can see that's Delta Pond. And that's this. Santa Rosa Creek is coming in from the east. Laguna de Santa Rosa coming in from the south, converging and flowing north. Here's the old downstream monitoring location just north of the Guerneville Road Bridge. The discharge pipe from the pond is right about here, just upstream of the confluence in Santa Rosa Creek. Here is a zoomed-in picture. The corner of Delta Pond, Santa Rosa Creek, the discharge pipe, the new upstream monitoring location, and the approximate location of the zone of initial dilution. Now I will go over the other minor changes. First, we change the filter loading rate requirement to allow for other methods of treatment. This will ensure an equal degree of treatment and reliability. This is to stay consistent with Section 60320.5 of the water recycling criteria contained in Title 22. This will enable the city to partake in a pilot study that could have potential statewide benefits. The pilot study is being sponsored by the National Water Research Institute and the Water Reuse Foundation. The study is intended to determine the effects of varying the filter loading rates on recycled water quality. The Santa Rosa Treatment Plant is a tertiary treatment facility, and currently the permit has a requirement for 5 gallons per minute per square foot, and that is loading of the water going through the filters, and this is to change that limitation to account to allow them to partake in the study to increase those rates without affecting the effluent quality. That is the reason it's considered minor. It's an internal process change, and all effluent requirements are going to stay the same. Secondly, we eliminated an exception in the previous permit for lab certification. Now, lab certification is required at all times. We changed the annual report submission date from February to March 1st. We included a safety hazard monitoring exception, so the city would not be out of compliance if it were unsafe to collect samples. And we eliminated 5 discharge locations that are no longer being used. I will show that here in this slide. Once again, you see the Laguna de Santa Rosa, Santa Rosa Creek, Delta Pond up here to the north, the treatment plant here, and here you see them in circles. I have circled the various ponds used in the reclamation system by the city, and I will move through the 5 discharge points that have been eliminated, but I want to emphasize that the ponds are still being used. We are just eliminating the option to discharge from those ponds because the city no longer needs that option. First, the Laguna Joint Wetlands discharge location has been eliminated. Arlington Pond, La Franconi, Ambrosini, and West College Pond 1C. Alpha Pond was eliminated in the last permit adoption. So what we'll be left with is discharge locations at the treatment plant, Meadow Lane Ponds, Brown Pond, and Delta Pond. With that overview, I recommend to the board to adopt the permit and late revisions as proposed. If you have any questions, I am ready to answer them.
Board member questions? Okay. We'll have a representative, City of Santa Rosa, Dave Smith.
Good morning. My name is Dave Smith with the firm of Merritt Smith Consulting. I'm here representing the City of Santa Rosa. And I've done so for, I think, 23 years now, and this is the first time I think I've ever appeared before the board where there were no comments on a City of Santa Rosa item.
We may take care of that.
The City of Santa Rosa wants to thank the staff for its effort to bring this matter before you today. Although some of the items that Kaysen just described are considered minor by your procedures, these are important changes for the city, particularly the filter loading rate issue. As Kaysen mentioned, it's going to allow the city to conduct a study that will determine whether additional filters are needed to handle the wet weather flows or not needed in order to meet our current effluent limits. So the potential cost savings is quite substantial, probably in the $20 to $30 million range. And if the studies work out, and if they don't, and we need to build more filters to meet our effluent limits, then that's what the city intends to do. But we appreciate the board's flexibility to allow that study to go on. The matter that I've been asked to speak to you about today, though, is to provide some technical background on the monitoring program. As Kaysen mentioned, it's an innovative program, and we want to thank the staff and recognize the staff's collaboration to bring this to you. It's a new approach to operating a discharge, and I agree with Kaysen that it may provide a model for other dischargers in the region as well. The The challenge that it's intended to address is one that's maybe particular to Santa Rosa, but maybe not. The pictures that Kaysen just showed about that large storage pond, that's 650 million gallons of water. And so it doesn't necessarily change water quality very quickly. Temperature, for example, is very stable in the pond. But the creek that we discharge into right there has a quite a variation, or can, on a day-to-day basis. And while this year all the reuse that the city has done, put in place, the city didn't discharge in this last discharge season, and that's a first as well. And I think it needs to be recognized that the city is relying less and less on discharge. In fact, in the future, we will only be discharging in those wetter years when we have more water than has been already sold for reuse or signed up for reuse. So we're taking a number of steps to assure compliance, and this is a key one. We're also, on that outfall that we're talking about today, currently in design on a diffuser that will further enhance initial dilution that we're going to talk a little bit more about here. So this is a an interim solution, and we can continue to apply these principles when we have more dilution, more instantaneous dilution coming in the future. But I wanted just to mention that we have these receiving water limits that we need to meet. I talked about temperature a minute ago. There are others that have been a challenge in the past, particularly when the city had more water to discharge than it does now. And this program will allow the city to manage its discharge, make decisions on a day-to-day basis, and agreed upon approach up front about what constitutes compliance. And so we're grateful to have that certainty and operate within it. So the water quality in the pond can vary. There's fish in the pond. There's algae growing in the pond. And so those produce oxygen. So we see some variation in oxygen in the pond, in fact, a little bit more than in the receiving water. And you can see pH varies in the pond because of that photosynthesis a little bit more than it does in the creek. On the other hand, temperature varies a lot more in the creek than in the pond, and turbidity is not very changeable in the pond, but changes dramatically in the stream. So these things make it difficult to know how much water can be discharged each day and be in compliance. And so this program that you're considering today gives a framework to determine compliance in advance and know in advance whether we're going to be in compliance or not. You've seen this already. And so what I'm going to show you next is a model simulation of what is going on right here in the vicinity of the outfall and how we use that information to determine compliance. So we take the water quality data that's collected continuously, that gets reported via satellite back to the treatment plant. We collect that information from a website and make decisions each day about discharge based on the water quality of the pond and water quality in receiving water, based on flow data in the stream. And so the fourth of the four variables then is the flow of the receiving water to determine what the concentration will be at the edge of this zone of initial dilution, which again I'll describe in a moment. So we make a calculation based on how much we think we can discharge each day. We discharge that, and then we verify that water quality conditions were as we expected them to be on that day of discharge. So each day we're looking back at the previous day to see, did we do were conditions as we expected. So we'll build in a little bit of buffer to allow for changed conditions that might not be exactly as we thought they would be based on the data from the day before. But this is a very clear and firm framework to determine compliance with the regulations, and we're quite pleased to have it before you for consideration. So we've done some modeling of the what happens to our water when it mixes with the receiving water, and where this zone of initial dilution, where the edge of it is, and this zone is defined by where our water is from a velocity perspective and its flow of direction, or direction of flow, where it is indistinguishable from the receiving water. So where it's lost its momentum coming out of the pond, it's at that point where we determine compliance. So this is a model that shows, or a model output that shows the zone of initial dilution. And it isn't shown here yet. I'll put that up in just a second, but I just wanted to orient you to what this graphic shows, because it's a color version of one that's in black and white in the attachments to your agenda materials. But this is the low flow channel bank along here. The outfall is right there. And these colors represent basically a concentration of recycled water. And so when flows are relatively low, the receiving water flow is, say, 30 cubic feet per second, and our discharge is say, 5. And these are just examples. We've evaluated, we have model output over the full range of discharge, our discharge, and the full range of stream discharge, so we know what this zone looks like, the shape of it, and we know what the concentration of recycled water and therefore all these water quality constituents are at the edge of the zone of initial dilution for all these combinations of flows. So I'm just showing you an example here. So this gives you an idea of the size of it. Kaysen showed it from an aerial view. This is sort of the model output, and so this is a scale of 10 feet. So this, the edge is anywhere, say, maybe up to 20 feet under these flow conditions out from the outfall. And when we add a diffuser, that this zone will get smaller. And so here's the condition when there's higher flow. And you can begin to see here, this is a higher concentration of recycled water right where it's coming out of the pipe. And the elevation of the water surface is much higher now, so it's a much broader a stream in this case, so our outfall is actually in the middle of the stream under higher flow conditions. But what we've got then is we know the concentration of our constituents along this border of the edge of initial dilution. We have that in a spreadsheet. We look that up every day to determine how much we can discharge. We discharge that, and then we go back at the end of the day and verify that we didn't cause a violation. If we did, we report it as such. We're not expecting to, because partly because we don't need to discharge as much water as we used to, but partly because we have this certainty in our operation system now so we can modulate our discharge on a daily basis to stay in compliance with high level of certainty. So that concludes my prepared remarks, and Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to respond to any questions if there are any.
Okay. Board member questions? Chair has some. In terms of the last point you made, that you're not discharging as much as you used to, what do you see being that amount as you go forward?
We have discharged as much as 3.5 billion gallons in a year. This last discharge season was zero. If this had been an average hydrologic year, we would have discharged probably around 200 or 300 million gallons. As the community, well, if the community starts to grow again, we would expect to discharge in an average hydrologic year of about 1,000 million gallons at our current design flows, which is 25.9 million gallons a day, and right now our flow is at about 15 million gallons a day. So that would be maybe 20 years into the future. So we would go in an average year from 100 to 200, 300 million gallons a year on up to maybe 1,000 or a little bit more in an average year.
And of that discharge, what percent comes by the way of delta pond for discharge?
Yeah, good question. In all foreseeable weather conditions, and by foreseeable I mean the wettest year on record, we would be able to discharge all of our water through delta pond and out and utilize this compliance approach up until about an average dry weather flow of, say, 23 million gallons a day. Again, we're at 15 now, and our design flow is almost 26. And we have a solution to that that was just adopted in an EIR. The city can upsize the connection from the geysers pipeline to Delta Pond so that at that point we could continue to get all of our water up to Delta. But with existing facilities, we can do it for the next 15 or so years, and in about 15 years, we would need to build a facility to move a little bit more water than we can currently from the treatment plant north to Delta for discharge.
And I would just note for the record that you're currently at 21.34.
The permit allows 21.34.
So you'll be back before that. If you have to do something at 23, you'll be back visiting us.
That's correct.
An earlier slide staff had up, it's the top slide of page 3 in the handout we have. I don't know if it's got a number. It's the one past, zoomed in on Delta, and then it goes one step further than Delta. One before that. It's the second one on the next one, that one. And I'm just interested, Dr. Smith, in terms of the ZID, zone initial dilution, as represented there on that. If that's your sense of what that oval will look like, and again, conditions will vary by the amount you're discharging, the amount in the creek, but in terms of just that representation, is that a fair one of what you see, agree is the zone, or?
Recall, it is, and let me amplify on that a little bit. The slides that I showed with model output had that dashed line showing the sort of the edge of the zone of initial dilution, and I think what this oval here represents is the space in which that downstream edge of the zone would move depending on the relative flows in the of discharge and stream flow. So that dashed line might have looked like this. It's sort of a balloon shaped coming out from the outfall and shaped like that. And in some cases, it might extend as much downstream as that, and in some cases only extend about that far. So I think that's what the oval represents.
So when you're trying to determine the amount to discharge for a day, is it the full extent of the oval as we see it here, or as you described it, is a smaller zone internal to that? At what point is the edge, I guess, or how do you know where the edge is?
Well, in fact, the location of the edge is not particularly what we use to determine compliance. The location of the edge moves, and we felt it was important for you to be aware of spatially where it is in the stream. But compliance is determined based on the ratio of recycled water to receiving water that we calculate at the edge, wherever that edge happens to be. And so we determine how much water we can discharge on a given day based on that ratio so that we don't cause any of those four water quality parameters that I just mentioned to be exceeded at that point, again, wherever it happens to be. And it happens it will happen to be somewhere inside this oval.
Mr. Hale.
I guess on top of that, is our ratio for discharge to receiving water still the 1 to 100? Or maybe that's a question for staff. Is that apply in this instance?
The basin plan has a prohibition for discharge in excess of that. And the city has been granted an exception to that. So it does not at all times adhere to that 1%.
You're showing a 20 CFS discharge to a 500 in the creek, and there's a little disparity. So thank you.
Exactly.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
Can I also ask you, this is a model, understandably, a complex model with lots of variables. Do then, with this model with refined over time, do you have the ability to come back to us, and again, this may be for staff, to come back to us and look and refine this model as either more information comes due or that changes in the seasonality or your own management of this system comes about? Do we build that into this?
Yes, indeed. You have, as one of your attachments, a plan to validate the results of this model. We would have liked to have accomplished that validation study before being before you today, but we didn't discharge this last year, and we didn't feel it was appropriate to discharge for the purpose of doing the study. And so there's a plan to validate this model and adjust it as appropriate, as models are and should be fine-tuned based on field validation. And so we intend to collect those data as soon as possible and make changes to the model as may be appropriate based on those results. And yes, your staff could bring this back to you at any time if it's determined that it isn't functioning as planned.
At the same time, building on what Board Member Hales asked, the seasonality of discharge, our basin plan prohibits a summertime discharge from the standpoint of effluent to receiving waters. Does this stay within that realm?
It does. The city's permit permits discharge between October 1st and May 14th each year. And in the last permits that have been adopted by this board, the city has been required to prepare a discharge management plan. And that discharge management plan gets updated as reuse comes online and we have more demands on recycled water and are discharging less. And that discharge management plan requires the city to follow a procedure for determining when discharge is appropriate. And now we've got this additional procedure on a daily basis to determine when discharge is appropriate and how much, but we also have to make decisions about when to start discharging and when to stop based on demands for recycled water and the history of flow in the receiving water so that, in general, impacts are minimized. And the city's discharge plan calls for discharge to occur almost exclusively in the months of December through March. As I said, in this year, there was no discharge whatsoever. In the future, in the wettest year on record, and we're at our design flows, we could just start discharging as early as about Thanksgiving and discharge into April. But if we had the wettest year on record this year at our current flows, we would be discharging in probably just the months of January, February, and March.
One last point, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this revision took care of this. It's just a minor point, but within the order, it includes a discharge point number 7, which I don't believe is actually a discharge point. It's in this table here. You actually have 7 discharge points versus 8. It's on the third page, and these are kind of the way they're numbered. It's number 5 within the page 5.
So we're in the white sheets?
Yeah, and I apologize. This is kind of chaotic, but yeah. It's actually numbered on page 5 within our order. It includes a discharge point number 7, and it's just a minor point, but being that we're going to write this into and approve, that it's just for clarity and for correctness.
Are you referring to the row that says downstream monitoring point station 526? R007.
I'm kind of lost in space here. There's a lot of things, but it's actually page 5 in our pamphlet.
Okay.
Here.
You see a page that looks like that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry for the confusion, but it's there.
Yeah. I believe you're referring to, well, first, it's going to be table 1 monitoring station locations.
Okay, so there's actually no header on this thing, so it's actually page 5.
Go to the white pages.
Oh, I see. Okay. I do not have a copy of that in front of me, but...
You could have mine. I'll rip it out for you.
Does it say R007?
No, it just says 007.
Okay, then that would need to be deleted.
Okay. It's a minor thing, but just have it.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah. Thank you.
You must have read this in great detail.
Your model was quite interesting.
I have a question, Dr. Smith. In terms of verification, as I understand it, that it's based, you go to the field and have a one-day collection of data, then from that flow in various cross-sections of the creek and the laguna?
I'm not recalling the exact field collection data protocol, but I think we would want to be doing the data collections on more than one day to capture receiving water flows. We can vary our discharge amount. That's something we have control over, but we don't have control over the receiving water flow. And so I think we're going to want to collect some data over a range of conditions, and we will be out in the field with a boat that's we can control the location of it fairly precisely. And so we'll know exactly where we collected samples, and we'll know where our model said the edge of the zone of initial dilution was. And so we'll compare those two, the model prediction versus what we measure in the field, and adjust the model as needed based on that information.
I was curious, not a mathematician or a scientist, but in terms of the model, as I understood it to be a two-dimensional model, how does it work when it goes into a three-dimensional creek?
We can operate that two-dimensional model multiple times and treat it as if it's a three-dimensional simulation. But the creek is relatively shallow and relatively well mixed vertically, and so the need to run the model at a bunch of different depths is minimal under most conditions.
And I'm going to take you to the, what I'll call the canary-colored pages in our book. It's the memorandum from you and Mike Deese to Lynn Small, January 22nd, 09. Page 16, and table 2, which is a small table on that page.
Yes, sir.
The left column shows that CFS, smaller being at the bottom 5, larger 120 at the top, and then receiving water flows across the top 800,000 up to 5,000. And I'm in the second, third column, 1,000, comparing the numbers 102.5 for 120 and the same number at the bottom, 102.5 at 5. It just struck me as odd that those numbers were identical for flows of that magnitude difference. And then they continue the same all the way out to 5,000.
I agree with you, and I don't have a satisfactory explanation as to why that that column, the numbers look exactly like they do, so I would need to look more closely at that. But I can tell you that on the face of it, these are generally not large changes in concentration at this high receiving water flow. But this would be something I would need to go back and dive into quite a bit of information to be able to explain.
And then the next page, table 3, on the other end, on when Santa Rosa Creek is at a low flow, 5 CFS or 10 CFS, the way I read this suggests that under those conditions, at 110.0 being no dilution, so it's you're not achieving the model showing no dilution at those low levels.
This is a description of an equation that's used, and so this represents a slope of a line, I believe, so this is not necessarily a dilution characterization. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of understand the city's interest in avoiding compliance issues, put it that way, and operating the model so as to keep within the requirements by the amount of discharge that occurs on a daily basis. How do we go back and verify how that occurred, or does it just have to rerun all the numbers to determine that things worked out okay, or how does, you know, if a point is raised that you were out of compliance under discharge, how do we go back and recreate the record to find out if you were or you weren't?
Yeah, good question. On a daily basis, we'll make a decision about how much to discharge on that day. And then the following day, we'll look back at what the concentration of each constituent actually was at the edge of the zone of initial dilution. And if any of those concentrations exceed a limit, then it would be considered a violation and would be reported as such. So each day that retrospection occurs to evaluate for compliance.
But again, it's my reading, am I incorrect in terms of the flow that is based upon the preceding day? So do you compare the discharge for compliance purposes to what that flow was the preceding day, or do you compare it to what was actually the flow of that day?
We compare it to what, when we determine compliance, we use the actual flow of the receiving water and the actual flow of discharge and the actual water quality in both waters to determine compliance. We do a projection to determine, make a decision of how much we will discharge, but we determine compliance based on actual conditions, not projected conditions.
And out of the, as I take it, four, maybe five factors, if conductivity is a factor, I'm not sure, but which ones are most controlling or limiting to the determination of, or does it vary on season, vary on day?
It does vary. There's going to be conditions where temperature is limiting. There's going to be conditions where oxygen is limiting. Those are be the most two likely ones to be limiting.
And that may be a question to staff. I haven't been able, there was a sheet in front of us this morning on corrections, and I think it raised turbidity is my question, I guess. I read in the, maybe you fixed it in terms of turbidity being an average daily, also collected hourly, also included in one of the limiting factors. So walk me through how turbidity will be handled in the model.
We decided to go with a daily average compliance determination with turbidity because of the effective steady state conditions in the pond. We're not going to see large spikes or large variations of turbidity within the day. However, due to issues arising out of monitoring, if one slug comes in front of the sensor, you might see a spike that's not representative of the entire day. So if you're taking continuous data collection throughout that day, an average is more appropriate than considering every 15-minute interval of continuous data collection. So for that constituent, we considered a daily average to be more representative of not only the actual conditions, but also of the impacts. With the other constituents, we are determining on an hourly basis.
You're monitoring upstream as well, so you've got an upstream and a downstream point.
Correct.
And building on that, is there the potential for discharge from the pond to the receiving water induced turbidity? Or is there like, what do we have for the outfall? Is there like a diffuser pipe, or are they expected to be relatively low discharges and
reasonably low velocities, so we're not going to have any potentially scouring or anything like that. They could be making some changes to the stream bed itself.
Currently, the velocity of the discharge is relatively low. It's a 48-inch pipe, open-ended pipe, no diffuser on it at all. I can't say that there's never any scouring. It could occur, and so this is something that we're designing a diffuser to minimize. But we do, as Kaysen mentioned, and I think you're aware, do some downstream verification monitoring, which would pick up any turbidity effects from scour. But we don't believe that's an ongoing, consistent problem. It may just occur on the first few hours of discharge each season or something like that. But it's not an ongoing issue.
And maybe no expected changes in channel geometry?
No.
Yeah, nothing
like that.
Nothing of that magnitude.
Right.
So to that point, in terms of downstream monitoring point, where will there be a collection of data in addition to the calculation? Are we monitoring actual conditions somewhere downstream?
The collection of data for temperature, turbidity, dissolved oxygen, and pH, the downstream grab samples will be used as model verification. But there will also be downstream grab samples taken for nutrients, which will be about 75 feet upstream of the confluence. So the nutrient samples will still be grab samples, whereas the model is only applied for those constituents, pH, turbidity, dissolved oxygen, temperature. So the model outputs will be the downstream receiving water, will represent those constituents. And we'll use the model verification grab samples to, those will be the only actual grab samples taken downstream.
There's also data sondes out here, though, isn't there?
Correct. The data sonde will be, there'll be a data sonde placed at the upstream monitoring location and a data sonde placed in the discharge pipe. So the continuous data collected from the data sondes will be in the upstream and in the effluent, and we'll use the model to take that data to calculate what the constituents are at the zone of initial dilution, and those data produced from the model will represent the actual conditions in the downstream monitoring location, and they will be determined for compliance, and we'll use actual grab samples to verify the model is precise and accurate.
And Dr. Smith, that finishes it. Are you okay?
I'm okay, yeah.
The city, is it okay with eliminating the discharge points that we're eliminating?
Yes.
And is the city okay with, outside of the discharge here at Delta, being a calculation of the model, the others I understood to be at end of pipe, is the city okay with end-of-pipe calculations? You answered that all discharges...
The answer is no. We're not okay with that, but we recognize that that's the reality of our situation, and I don't mean to say by answering no that we're requesting a change or in any way think it's appropriate for you to regulate like that. We just don't want to have to discharge at those locations because of the constraints there. We're putting our effort into enhancing this outfall with a diffuser and with the development of this model and the presentation to you today of this option for compliance determination. So we're putting our effort on this outfall and intend to discharge all of our recycled water that needs to be discharged at this location.
And the question, page 19, again, the Canary pages, the letter from the city of January. In that chart table, 6 for pH, saying that the criteria is to be determined. Elsewhere, I see that there's some criteria for pH. Is the city okay with the criteria of the staff report?
Yes, and Kaysen and I perhaps had a miscommunication and a draft that. It's a change that I should have made and didn't make, but yes, it's our understanding that we will follow the pH approach. I think there was a point in our discussion where we hadn't resolved fully all these issues, and this document apparently just didn't get modified to reflect all the agreements with staff.
And the staff on page E10. I see it a couple of places. E10 on 5A2, sample type. We're towards the bottom of the page. One paragraph up from the bottom, sample type. The last sentence, monitoring locations 002 to 013. I don't think we have a 13 anymore. Maybe we do, but I don't. Because it's corrected on the page previous, D9, at the top.
You are correct. I've done to the best of my ability to go through the document and correct the relevant monitoring location numbers and ranges. However, there are inevitable difficulties when going into one of these huge documents, and I had to balance different goals, one of which was to focus on just these changes, and the other one was to create a completely accurate permit, and that's one example of something that got missed. However, it right there, it's showing a range, so it does. It's not overly restrictive. It's so I would consider that fine.
All right, that's good. All right, other board questions, comments? Any final staff comments?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Norton.
I would like to request, you know, just that this model really, you haven't discharged this year. You really haven't had a chance to verify this. And at some point in the future, I'd like to hear verification on this. Maybe just through the executive officer report would be fine. You don't have to come before, or maybe
sure.
So. At the same time, this is the second time that we've had a change to the filter, the 5 gallons per square foot. This is the second time. I realize that's a Title 22 requirement. We did it last meeting, I believe, with Guerneville. Same thing, since it's a performance criteria and not a mandated Title 22 right criteria, I guess I'm just interested, is that something we're going to see more often? Is that five, that number five that's in Title 22, unrealistic? Are we going to see more of that? And it's just a question that if we get a report back, I'd just like to hear if from a performance criteria, does your filters perform to manufacturer spec and meet that requirement? So I would just request that we get some feedback on this and at some time in the future. No, I realize your discharge season this year is over basically before it even started, but that we get some information back.
Absolutely.
Definitely happy to provide that.
Okay. Okay. Entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
Second.
Any comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We're going to go on. Item 5.